Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the talk show, Uplifting Communities. And I mean, we're going to have a really good show for you guys today. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And, I'm just so happy that we have this lady on the talk show today. Okay, but before I go any farther, I would like to ask Ms. J if she would take the pleasure in bringing Ms. Terry O'Neill on air with us.
Absolutely. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us, and welcome, Ms. Terry O'Neill. Before we get started, I posted about you, I've talked about you a lot, but would you mind taking a moment to tell the audience a little bit about you, and then we're going to just dive into all the great things that you're doing in your community.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, first I want to say thank you for having me on, John and Ms. J. I appreciate it. I am, author, poet, screenwriter. I've been in the literary industry writing for over 20 years, I'll say that, but in a literary industry on this journey for the last give or take 20 years or so. I highly enjoy working with youth and just giving them opportunities and platforms to share their work, share their poetry, their art, their prose, with each other and also just kind of with the world. And just really giving back and sharing my love for literacy. And it also gives me an avenue to express myself as well. So my passion, even though I do many, many other things, my passion is writing. I write fiction, children's poetry, nonfiction, screenplays. I kind of dabble in different genres, but my first love in literature is poetry.
Yes. One of the things I love about you got some of the similar interests as far as children and writing. But what I saw your book on about the young man that wanted to come home, your documentary about missing children. That is that's my passion. That's my Agatha. That's what I do. I do that.
Yes.
And I love that. I saw it, and I was like, oh, somebody sees it like I see it. And I was just like totally taken back because I've been doing child safety and for decades now. So I really wanted to applaud you for that because people, I would say our culture, really don't know the magnitude of black missing children never coming back. I think, I talk about it a lot, but a lot of people don't talk about it. And I was just so excited to see the documentary that you created because it is really important that we understand that we got a lot of babies missing and a lot of mamas sitting with broken hearts.
Yes, yes. The documentary Hope of Finding a Son is one that I first started it's been 8 years, 8 years ago. And I'm actually still working on the documentary in the production or post-production stage. We're still working on that, but we just ran into, 8 years ago when we first started, because there's a mystery behind this particular story. Maurice LaLonde Jefferson, who went missing, back in the 80s, actually from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and his story was it moved me so deeply when I first heard of him, which was on a missing persons flyer. And I reached out to his mother, we connected and we decided that a documentary would be the most fitting for his story. And we ran into some roadblocks and a few issues. Actually, the footage was stolen after we interviewed the community and interviewed, many people who were connected to his case. And we went back home to enter into back to California to get into the post-production stage. The footage was stolen. So, it was stolen.
Wow.
It was stolen.
I know his story because I'm in Florida, and I was excited that you picked that up. It's a lot of stories like his, you know, but I was excited that somebody was considerate enough to even take on the challenge of putting these stories out about these children, and you know, I'm sure you'll put it all back together and start all over again because, you know, you're passionate like that. But I just wanted to applaud you for that because his story is, you know, I'm in Jacksonville, so I know about the, you know, his story, and I just thought it was awesome. So I'm sorry that I did that, but I trust you and God to put it all back together again.
Amen. Amen. I am not giving up on this story. I will not. I refuse. It's going to happen. We're working on it, so it's in the works, and it's going to come. It's going to come, and it's going to be powerful. And we hope that when it does, that you know we can, you know, be able to bring some type of closure, or it will encourage people to actually come out and reveal actually what they saw and what really happened to him, because we know people know and they haven't forgotten. You know, some people have not forgotten, especially those who know about it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, if anybody know the feelings of having a loved one been missed, you know, missing, is me. My father was missing for a year and a half. Nobody didn't know where he was. And when they found him, they found the remains of his body.
Oh, my God.
You know. And there's so many people, and I'm very aware, you know, now these days what I do, I be seeing, you know, posters up, and there's more and more posters up. There's people is actually becoming aware of all the missing children, all the missing adults, teenagers, that's in the black communities.
Mm-hmm. Well, I disagree with people coming aware of it. And the reason why is because I do it every day for a living. People are, they are, being aware and being active is two different things.
Yeah,
and
right.
being, you could be aware and not be active. And what I mean by that is that when Missing in Black, National Missing Exploited Children, when they post, people don't care. They just look at it, or they make their comments. But that's nice. But the whole point of sharing those photos are for them to be shared. And the only way we can bring anybody home is to share that information. We use social media for everything else. We'll share a concert 100,000 times, but we won't share one missing person. So being to know and to be active is two different things. And I think knowing is not enough. Being active is what we need, especially in the black community, where we make up almost half of the millions of people that go missing every year.
Right. Well, you're absolutely right about that. You know, I think that, you know, definitely, you know, in order to bring change, we have to be, well, I'll say the first thing to change, the first thing to change is awareness. So we have to be aware of it first, and then we have to be active. But I think, you know, just touch on John's point, I think it's, you know, becoming more, people are talking about it more. And even though they may not be as active, you know, it's people are learning more and hearing more about it, whether it's becoming more prevalent today than it ever has been before. You know, I don't know the statistics on that. However, there's a lot of human trafficking going on. I think it's more prevalent today than it has ever been. Not to say, I mean, back in the day, there were a lot of missing. There were a lot of them went missing back in the day. But I think it's becoming just, you know, I mean, there's human trafficking, you know, and a lot of other things going on. But, you know, we hear about it more in the news and in the media, you know.
I know, and especially in African American communities, in some, well, not every community, but in some communities, if it's a black person, a kid, or adult, or teenager, well, it's posted. A lot of it is posted.
Right.
You know, and at one time it wasn't like that. For example, when my father was missing, and nobody posted no pictures up. You know,
yeah, that's
I mean, they didn't even talk about it. You know,
yeah.
I mean, amongst the family we did, but it wasn't nobody, you know, actually out there trying to find him, because everybody just gave up, I guess. And to be honest with you, I guess including me too. You know, because I didn't know where to look anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And
that's,
so.
Yeah.
That's devastating, you know.
Yeah. It is.
And
I
applaud you, Terry, for doing this documentary, because that is very important. We need that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
You too, Ms. J, for taking the responsibility of working in that field, because that's important.
It's hard. It's hard to do. You know, it's heartbreaking.
It is. It's hard on your heart.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yes.
But more about you. So you have some other books. Let's talk about the other books that you have out. You have poetry and a couple other books. So let's talk about that. You
yes.
have some upcoming books that are coming out.
I do. Let's say I started with poetry, you know, so I guess I'll touch on those first. I have four volumes of poetry. I released my first book back in 1999, which was Motion Sickness. And then a couple years later, I released The Poet Speaks in Black. And I've been, you know, as you see the timeline here, I've been writing, published for many, many years. Over two decades, so much has changed. You know, I think John can attest to that, and the writers. You said you're a writer as well, so you probably attest to how publishing, writing, and the industry has changed over the years. I know it has changed dramatically since I first started. Mm-hmm. As a child, I've always loved writing and English and books, literature. I was exposed at a very young age, and it was part of my journey. When I met one of the greatest voices in African American literature at the age of five, Miss Maya Angelou, and all of these things and my journey has contributed to and shaped the writer and the woman that I am today. Three of my greatest inspirations in writing are my children, my passion for just being a mother, being an educator and a youth activist. I spend a lot of time in the school system. Working with youth and just allowing them to share their works and publishing. You know, I've published a number of young people, their poetry, prose, and short stories through the book Make Some Noise, which we have an upcoming release coming very soon, actually next month. This particular volume is specifically for or inspired by or written by Lafayette youth from Lafayette, Louisiana. Lafayette, Louisiana. Last year we published Baton Rouge youth that spoke about creatively through poetry, short stories, their experience of, you know, the storm, the great Louisiana storm, and the shootings that had occurred that year, the tragic shootings that we experienced in America. But they shared, you know, their stories about losing everything, you know, in the flood, and just their near death experiences, and it was very therapeutic for them.
Yes. And you actually working with the youth, with the kids in school, about this, you know, about the tragedy the tragic mm-hmm. that then went on through those storms back there. And, you know, adults normally, that's very good, Terry, really, on a for real side. That's good.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is because most of the time when we have a tragedy, we're mainly adults. You know, we talk about it. You know what I'm saying? Oh, I done lost this and I done lost that. You know? But I very seldom, I'm not saying that it don't happen, but I very seldom, you know, hear children talking about how they felt about that. You know, about these tragedies.
Yeah.
And what you're doing is giving them a platform to where they can go and express themselves through poetry. That is great. That's great.
Yeah, because what I found, thank you, John, thank you. What I found is that in dealing with youth, and I've all, you know, even though, you know, I teach higher education for the most part, I don't, you know, I do specialized teaching, which is giving workshops and, you know, teaching poetry and other, you know, writing workshops, you know. And I do other things like, you know, the Black History Bee. But I know that, you know, I've seen the lack of hope in today's youth, as well as, you know, their fervent desire just to have their voices heard. You know, they just want to be heard. They just want to matter, you know, just like the rest of us, you know. And they are not getting that, you know. So they act out. And in many cases, they act out. But if we give them a positive atmosphere, one that's safe and one that allows them to express themselves without being judged, ridiculed, and criticized in a negative way, you know, we can help them to shape that, you know, and hone their crafts and, you know, and express themselves, you know, creatively and positively, you know. So, you know, that's what I try to do. Just let them be heard, because what they have to say, I mean, their words are powerful. Absolutely
yes.
powerful.
Yes. I think that's pretty awesome. I think about the young kids right now that are battling the gun rights. And, mm-hmm. and you're right, it's really interesting to see that those kids have a lot of things to say, and they
mm-hmm.
and they articulate what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And it took a whole bunch of kids to get mad to, you know, get something at least started. We know it's not going to be, you know, the beginning and end, but their voices matter because they are the future.
Yes,
they are
exactly.
going to be the ones that are going to be running things. They are going to be
yes.
making decisions. And as we get older, we have less power in that area.
Yes.
So I think we really need to embrace the kids' voice, and I think that's really awesome that you allow them to heal, because it's also a process of healing through that. So I applaud you for that, because that is major.
Yes, absolutely. You're absolutely right. You took the words right out of my mouth, because these are the people who are going to be taking care of us. Okay?
That's right.
When we get old, right?
Right.
Yes. So we need to take care of that. We need to help them, you know?
You know, that I love it. I just love it. And you're 100% right. You know, what happens, I think, that a lot of our, especially our older, the older generation, you know, they see a lot of these kids, you know, they dress, you know, well, they say it's inappropriate. They got their own little style, you know, with the pants hanging down and showing their underclothes and all that. They think that's cool, you know, but we still has to, we can't throw these children away. We
that's
just
right.
can't give
Absolutely
up.
Absolutely not.
Well, we can't
first of all, they didn't ask
exactly.
They didn't ask to be here first and foremost. And I think us as a society, because we have gotten so lenient, so laid back, you know, the thing is change is the only constant. It's inevitable, you know.
Absolutely.
So we have to learn how to communicate with them on a different level in terms in the language that they understand. You know, that's the only way we're going to be able to really relate to them, you know, and get, you know, and allow them to relate to us and to understand and connect with the past and understand how the past, you know, and even what they're going through now is going to affect the future, and really to really know who they are and identify with themselves so they can be whole, as whole as they can in today's society, you know, but just to be able to relate to them. We have to be creative, and even though, you know, we think our style is better, that's neither here nor there. This is the trend. This is society, and this is what we're dealing with right here and right now. How can we, as adults, you know, or as elders, you know, how can we change our language to relate to them? Because that's one of the biggest problems, is they don't see, and why it's so difficult to connect with them is because of the communication and the gap, you know, the age gap and the culture gap.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. You're 100%.
I'm sorry, John. Go ahead. Sometimes as older adults, we talk at children instead of to
mm-hmm.
them.
Mm-hmm.
We put demands. I know, like, when I go, I also go to schools out here, and a lot of times I just sit down in a chair. I don't stand over them. I talk to them the way they talk to each other.
Yes.
And they laugh. They go, "How you know that?" You know, I'm Googling stuff. You know, I'll be Googling.
I know,
but,
right? You have to.
But it's important, you know, that they understand that they matter. And I think what you're doing is letting them know that they matter, because we, believe it or not, us elders or older people, 30, 40 and up, we're not going to be running things in 10 or 20 years. We're going to be counting on those kids to make decisions for our health, for our medical, for our whatever. And if they don't like old people, they're going to make some bad decisions. So we really need to kind of bridge that gap, you know, and try to, you know, get it together, especially with the climate that we are in politically. We really need to, you know, teach them and educate them. And, you know, it's just really important. And, like you do that Black History Bee, and I've been into that, too. And I love that. Because I think a lot of our kids really don't understand the magnitude of our history. They get it in the books. They, you know, they may see some people post it on Facebook or, you know, Twitter or whatever. But I don't really think they understand the power of that foundation and the power that they have within themselves. You know, and I think, you know, you giving them a voice kind of makes them, you know, get that fire, like, okay, I understand. I can be up there at Tubman at my time. You know, we ain't got the tunnels. We ain't got to dig no holes. But we got some other things we can do. You know, you're giving them that opportunity to, you know, be that individual. And I think that's major, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Terry, she's the founder of the National Black History Bee. And that is one of the best programs you have that, you know, I've seen in a long time when you're talking about Black history, because I had the opportunity of sitting on Terry's panel in Stockton. Was that Stockton? Stockton,
yes,
California.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And those kids are very, very smart. You know, they knew more about Black history than I did. I tell you that right now.
That's
what they need. Yes.
Yeah.
We need that, you know. And I think, John, older generations, and I'll say this, I mean, I took some Black history courses in college, but I still believe that going to high school and we did history, we didn't do Black history in our high school.
Right.
If we did
Thank
that,
you.
We did an elective. And then they taught us stuff we already knew. They never go into the deep stuff. They never go into names you never heard of. And so that's why I think that's really important, that the program that you have, because they need to know about it's so much stuff about Black history we still don't know. I mean, that's one of my – I love history. So that's one of my things. But I'm always learning something new. And just like John said, I checked out your beat, your information on your history, and I was like, dang, I didn't know that one. You know, so it's always something to learn. You know, because I mean, usually Black History Month, I'm a beast. I'm like, poster, blah, 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 blah. So it's always something to learn, you know, and the fact that they have the opportunity to get the information, what they do with it, that's between them and God, but at least you're placing that before them. And I think that's major.
Yeah. You know, let's back up for a little bit, because we was talking about the behavior of children, and I wanted to ask Ms. J a question. I never asked you this here, and this is the perfect opportunity to ask you this question, Ms. J. You was an A&R rep, or you still are, I'm not really sure. You know, for the audience don't know what an A&R rep is, that's the people that get all of these singers and rappers into major record labels, okay? And Ms. J, she does that. That's what she does. She get, you know, people, you know, good, get them hooked up, in other words. How do you deal with some of the kids? Ms. J, how do you deal with some of the kids that come to you that want to be a star in rapping, but they got either a bad attitude or their music is full of cursing and things like that? How you deal with that?
Well, I tell them. I tell them that, you know, things need to be critiqued. I'm honest, and sometimes I can be brutally honest, but I am honest because in the entertainment world, as Terry can tell, because she's part in that world herself, it is not an easy road. So you can't go in there soft from the beginning, and you got to be open to criticism,
right.
And you got to be able to make adjustments when needed. And so if you come in with the frame of mind is that you got it all together, nobody can tell you nothing, then you should start your own indie label. Because because let's be real, like if you're in there teaching poetry and someone's telling you, oh no, Miss Terry, we're gonna do it like this. Well, I'm the teacher. I know it works.
Right.
You know, there has to be some type of humbleness in there. I don't care how great you think you are.
Exactly.
You have to have
And that's
humbleness.
What they're lacking. And that's what a lot of them are lacking today, unfortunately.
Yeah, they feel entitled.
Exactly.
A lot of people that deal with feel entitled. They think they got 100, they got 1,000 likes on Facebook, but if those 1,000 likes ain't buying your music, those likes don't count. You know, and so I think it's a disillusion that they see a lot of people these days get quick celebrity status through these Instagrams and Facebooks and things like that, and they don't think they have to put in work. I think no matter what you do, whether you're writing poetry or you're writing raps, you have to put in work. And that's how you feel about it. You have to work. No matter what you do.
Yeah.
So, you know, I bless them. You know, some people get mad and my family like it. Okay, then have your family cut you a check for your studio time, for your business. You know, it cracks me up. It might be mean, but I'm like, dude.
No,
you know,
I think it's that they don't understand. There's a lot that they don't understand about the process.
They don't know but they want the money.
Yeah. Exactly. They don't understand that everything is a process and it's not going to just be handed to you. You have to work hard for it. It's not easy, you know. It's not going to come easy, but anything worth having is worth, you know, fighting for. If it's really what you're passionate about, you're not going to give up on that. You're not going to quit because it's not what you do. It's who you are, you know, and you're going to want to be the best at it that you can be. So you're going to you're going to listen and not just hear. You know what I'm saying.
You ever run across that, Terry, when you're dealing with the young kids?
Oh, yeah. And I do tell them, you know, that it's not easy. And not even just with the young kids, with people, aspiring writers in general, you know.
Hello?
Young kids, adults, you know what I'm saying? They don't really know or understand. And I'm even guilty of it back when I started back in the 90s. You know, I didn't understand what that entailed. You know, I didn't understand what becoming a writer really meant, you know, until I actually got in there and I started doing it. You know, and many aspiring writers are, there's a lot of misunderstanding about how it's done, the process, you know. And I think that's the first thing. People really need to know what this entails, because when you find out, you know, you may not want to do it, You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It might not exactly be the area that you want to be in, you know, in this industry, you know, or maybe you just want to write, you know. So, I mean, I tell them, I'm an open book, and I tell people, you know, I share, you know, the process and, you know, the misinterpretations of it, because people think you walk into a bookstore, you know, and, you know, you're supposed to write, you know, your works, a poetry, fiction, whatever it is, whatever genre, a certain way, and, you know, and this is just a book on a shelf. There's a lot more to it than just that. It's not that easy, you know.
It's
a process to it all. There's a lot that you need to know, just the distribution, the editing, everything, you know. The printing, if you're doing self-publishing, if you're submitting a query letter to editors, you know, it's all a process. Yeah.
Well, I got into the writing business late, and I learned a whole lot with my second book, Mentally Blind, Open Your Eyes. That thing wasn't even edited, you know. And one thing I learned, and you write, Terry, because a lot of time people, if you don't. That's one thing. I think there's one of the code of ethics in the writing business. If you write something, you got to get it edited.
Yes.
Right.
Whether you get it published through, whether you do it independently or when you're submitting it to a publishing house, an editor, it doesn't matter. You have to go through the editing process. That's essential. That's key.
Yeah.
Is get editing. This can often be overlooked sometimes, but you can't. You know, if you can't overlook that, it's so important, so crucial.
It really is. I tell people that they always say they want to write and whatever, and I say, well, make sure you get Grammarly first. That'll be your first editor. Then you're going to have to get second editor.
Grammarly.
I love Grammarly.
Grammarly.
Yeah, that thing is awesome. But you're going to have to get a second editor after you use Grammarly, you know. And, you know, a lot of people think that they just get whatever they want. You know, I love Grammarly. I have no shame in my game. I do a lot of blogging, so I use Grammarly a lot. And
wow.
Yeah, so I just think that, you know, you're correct. A lot of times people say, well, that ain't what I meant to say. I don't want to say it like that. But if you're trying to sell your thought, or your emotion, or your feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there's other words that can sell it better than the words you chose. So you have to be open.
Hey,
yes,
you know one thing? I got a confession. I have my sister. Okay, when I wrote the book, I think it was my second book. She read it and she told me. She said, "Oh my God, your grammar!" She said, "People just put this book down."
Hey,
I got mad at her.
You got mad, John.
Yeah, I got mad.
But she
said,
"You know."
She said, "You need to get it edited." She said, "It's a good book, but you have to get it edited so it can flow right." She said,
"Yeah.
You got words that don't belong there, misspelled."
Aww.
That's because you write from emotion. Writers write from emotion. You'll have one. Well, I know I do. I have one page, then I'll come back after doing some more and come back and fix that first one. I think we write with our emotions. Especially depends on what you're writing. But I know, like with poetry, the child safety books, I'm writing from a place of emotion. Like I want people to get it. So sometimes I have to backtrack and go, "You can't say that. You gotta say
right.
They gonna get mad at
right.
You know.
Right.
So." I get that, John. That's just you just writing from the heart, boo. But at least she loves you enough.
You know, but I listened. I took her advice. I think Terry and I was talking about it. This lady, Emily Hills.
Emily Hills.
She edited my book. Okay, and it's way much better. I'm talking about way much better.
That's an awesome book.
Yeah. And that was tough, John, because I remember me and John talked, and John was not trying to get that book edited.
No.
Yeah, I remember when you were set dead. I remember you were set dead against it. Set dead. He was like, this is how I want them to understand me and understand, you know, it's a What did you say? I don't remember your exact words verbatim, but you were against that. You were like, you didn't want to change your voice. You didn't want that voice to change.
And it had to be an excellent book. If anybody has not read
yes,
John's
it
book,
is. Yes.
It is an excellent read. Now that
yes.
it's been edited. Yes, sir. No. But it's a great book.
That you can understand. You can understand it a little bit more.
Oh, my God.
No,
yeah,
but
it's
honest. It's a great book. It's honest. It gives a lot of information. It's a great book. So if you have not read John's book, you know, not just trying to talk him up, but I'm serious. It's a great book. I have a copy. It's a great book. And if you get opportunity to pick that up, it's on Amazon. It's a great book. You should pick it up.
Oh, I have it. I got John's book.
I'm talking to the audience.
Oh,
I'm talking to the audience.
Oh, yes. I'm like, yes, I got it. I got my copy. I got mine.
Yeah, we got ours.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. And but I tell you, I don't know if Terry wanted to talk about this, but also she has a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Explain to the audience a little bit about your nonprofit, Terry. It's called Lend Your Hand. And
yes.
That's a real
mm-hmm.
good program. I like that.
Yeah.
Well,
nice title.
Was founded, thank you. It was founded in 2005, and it was first founded, I was inspired, as you know, those who know me, and you know, as I've stated, I'm very active with youth, and I have been, you know, for as long as I can remember, because it's just in my heart. I'm very passionate about working, making a difference in the lives of young people.
Yes.
So I actually, it's something that I had always wanted to do, but it didn't actually come into fruition until a trip to Jamaica. And, you know, I'm always giving and donating and helping. And when I took a trip to Jamaica 1 year, I was so touched by, they were just so loving, you know. I visited some schools there. They were so loving, and they were so happy, and they greeted me with open arms. And even though I brought, you know, I always bring books and things to give away, the books that I share, the stories that I share with the students, you know, I always bring something to give to them. But I was just so moved by, you know, the disparity there. They had little to nothing. You know, they didn't have paper. They didn't have an intercom at this particular school. So when I arrived there at the school, they actually had to send a student to the classrooms that I was visiting and to announce that I had arrived. They didn't have paper to even write on. They didn't have pencils. And I was just so, but they were so grateful and they were so happy, you know. And I was really, I'm like, I have to give more. You know, it was through my desire to give more that Lend Your Hand was created, you know, actually was founded.
Wow.
And it allowed me to give in ways that I wanted to give, to bridge the gap and to provide youth with and disadvantaged students with school supplies, materials, and or resources needed to achieve academic success. And however I could do that, whether it was, you know, through donations, through the programs that I do, through speaking in the schools, you know, through Make Some Noise, you know, any literary, any outlet, you know, or program that I could do to accomplish that, I did through Lend Your Hand. Now I'm
Man.
Transitioning, Now I'm transitioning Lend Your Hand to under the Terry O'Neill Foundation. So it'll still be the same type of nonprofit with the same mission and purpose and vision. You know, it'll just be under the Terry O'Neill Foundation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
That's
we
awesome.
Have a we have someone either want to ask you a question or elaborate on something. Let's let them in, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello, Tommy Cole, Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Hey, Tommy.
Hello, hello, Mr. John and Miss Jay and Miss Terry. I just want to holler to Terry,
Tommy.
Because I almost became a movie star because of you, girl. I mean,
oh,
Mrs.
my gosh. Well,
yes,
still hold on.
You know
on
we
to
miss
hope
you over
because,
here. I beg your pardon?
Oh, yes. Still hold on to that hope because it's still happening. In the name
okay,
of Jesus,
great,
it's
great.
Happening. Yes.
Oh, well, if it's
yes.
in the name of Jesus, hey, it's going to happen. But I didn't think you would recognize
done.
Me, Miss Terry.
Oh, absolutely. You know what? Let me just say something.
Yeah.
I was so touched and moved by everyone who came out and everyone who supported before we ran into our roadblocks and fell out of production. I know everybody who I've been in touch with and who auditioned. I remember all of you guys. Please.
Yeah, praise God. Praise God.
You know, you
praise
guys
God.
touched my heart, you know.
Yes,
you know, it's very, you know, emotional for me, you know,
yes,
but we are, you know, we've been through a battle with the production, but we're coming through on the other end and we are getting it back. We're going to get back in pre-production and you'll be hearing about
hey.
It. You'll be hearing our name
yes,
and hopefully you'll come out
yes.
again.
Yes, sir. Well, we're still
you know?
With you and we're praying, you know, and of course,
yes.
man, hey, we admire you to the most over here now. And
oh,
you keep that good work
thank
up.
You.
And John and,
yes.
and John and Miss Allen, boy, you know I love you all, man.
Look,
yes, I was out with the, and I know you only have a few minutes, but I was out with the minister. You know, we was going to the hospital, we were visiting the shut-in and stuff. So, hey, that's what I was doing. So I was late calling in. But, look, hey, I love you guys. You guys keep doing what you're doing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Back on you guys, John, Miss Allen.
Right. Love you, too.
Hey,
okay.
All right, Tommy. Yeah, well, we had a good time out there in Louisiana, didn't we?
Yes, we did, man. You got to come back.
I'll probably take Terry and Miss Jay down there.
Yeah,
or
you know
man.
I don't want Miss Jay to come, but Miss Jay she don't pay me no mind.
Hey.
Yeah.
Well,
y'all come on down. Y'all come on down Louisiana. We got an alligator for y'all.
Yes, hey, you know, I come out there a couple of times a year, so at least two
okay.
times a year, I'm out there, you know.
Okay.
Yep,
right.
Yep. Well, we only have 2 minutes and 10 seconds left on the show, so I'm asking Ms. Jay to start closing this out.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you, Tommy, for calling. And I would like to shout out one of the authors, indie authors that donated books for the literacy cause, Alicia M. Hazen, thank you very much. I like to do that every show, make sure I get everybody in there. And Miss Terry, if you had one positive thing to leave the audience with, what would that be today?
You know, I always say, you know, carry out your dream. It's usually a literary dream, no matter how unlikely it may seem. Everybody has a story, you know, even if it's not your goal to be an author, you know,
yeah.
Put it on paper, you know, and don't give up. Just don't give up on that, you know. Remember, like you said earlier, anything worth having is worth fighting for, you
Absolutely.
Know. Yes, and just stick in there, you know, and it'll happen. Don't give up, you know. Don't give up
yeah.
on it.
Absolutely. And Mr. John L. Brown.
Well, first of all, I want to tell Terry, thanks a lot for coming on the show. I learned a lot from you, and thank you. That's all I have to say is thank you so much, and keep the good work up. And back to you, Miss Jay.
Yeah, absolutely. I concur with John. Thank you, because someone like myself, I'm a youth advocate as well. And I like to run across my own kind, so I am really blessed to be in your presence today, because they count on us to step up, and I appreciate you stepping up, and I appreciate you joining us today, sharing your information with us. And I hope the audience enjoyed it as well. And so I just say thank you to everybody that joined us today, and thank you to Ms. Terry O'Neill. Until next
thank
time.
Thank you very much.
Peace and blessings.
Peace and blessings. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.